Radio Prague News.
The Green Party leadership has recommended that its MPs support the minority cabinet of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek in the upcoming vote of confidence. Edvard Janota, the Deputy Minister of Finance, has been dismissed from his post, and police statistics reveal that over 4,000 phone lines were wiretapped during the first half of this year. At its Saturday meeting in Pardubice, the Green Party leadership recommended that its members of parliament vote to support the minority civic democratic cabinet of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek during the October 3rd vote of confidence in the lower house. Green Party leader Martin Bursík already indicated in recent days that his inclination is to support Mr. Topolánek, a position now confirmed after Mr. Topolánek's Friday evening meeting with Green Party MPs, during which he reassured them that the Civic Democrats will not seek a grand coalition agreement with the Social Democrats any time later this autumn. Analysts are predicting that it will still be extremely difficult for Mr. Topolánek's government to win the vote of confidence, given that support from Civic Democrat, Christian Democrat and Green Party MPs still only makes for 100 votes in the 200-seat Chamber of Deputies. Meanwhile, Minister of Finance Vlastimil Tlustý dismissed his deputy, Edvard Janota, on Friday. Saturday's papers comment on the dismissal being closely connected to newspaper ads taken out recently by the Ministry of Finance, pointing to the problems in state deficit. The ads have met with criticism because they were paid for using taxpayers' money, and analysts say that Mr. Janota is taking the fall for the ministry's unpopular strategy. Mr. Janota, aged 54, a nonpartisan employee of the Ministry of Finance, has worked under 9 different ministers in the post-1989 era. Since 1992, he has served as director of the division responsible for the state budget. In an interview for the Daily Pravo, Mr. Janota said that he's not sure whether he'll stay on at the ministry in another capacity. This will be a topic of discussion at a meeting with Mr. Tlustý on Monday. Coming on the heels of recent wiretapping accusations related to the Kubica case and Friday's call for 3 government ministers to resign, statistics released by the police presidium on Friday reveal that 4,130 telephone numbers were monitored regularly by the police during the first 6 months of 2006. However, police are careful to stress that the number of wiretappings does not equal the number of people whose conversations are being monitored by police during investigations. For many suspects operate with several mobile and fixed-line phones. A judge must approve a police request to wiretap phone lines before any such action can be taken. Some politicians and representatives of human rights organizations are criticizing what they see as the high number of wiretapping cases. And approximately 50 anarchists have gathered near Czeslaw, central Bohemia, to protest against an American anti-missile defense base that could be established in the Czech Republic. The protest, organized by the CSAF group, has also attracted members of ultra-right groups who have a history of violent clashes with the anarchists. And finally, a quick look at the weekend weather. It is expected to be mostly sunny with some cloudy periods and daytime highs of about 25 degrees Celsius. I'm Linda Maschalis, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and my name is Dita Asiru. Up next in the program, Czech farmers have produced white carrots. A non-existent bridge gets officially abolished. And whatever happened to the boy who played the young Amadeus in Miloš Forman's famous film? Find out more in Magazine with Daniela Lazarová. In Czech by Numbers, our Czech learning program, learn some of the Czech phrases and terms that use the verb to count. And we'll be hearing from Jeremy Drucker, executive director of the internet magazine Transitions Online.
Wine
harvest festivities are now taking place around the Czech Republic, including most parts of Prague. Although wine growing was originally restricted to Moravia, that's the eastern part of the country, the warmer summers we've had in recent years have encouraged farmers and gardeners elsewhere to try their hand at wine growing. And they have met with considerable success, even wine growers here in Prague. Originally, the Czech capital only had the royal vineyards that were planted by Emperor Charles IV, but now almost every Prague district has its own vineyard, and they vie whose wine is better on a given year. The annual wine harvesting celebrations are held on Prague's main squares, and they involve theatre performances, live bands, dancing, and, of course, wine tasting. The merriest and most colourful take place in Prague's Vinohrady district, which literally means the vineyard district in Czech, where the procession is led by none other than Emperor Charles IV. Prague Castle also has its own vineyards, and the wine from them is served exclusively at the president's table. So, unless you're a VIP visitor at Prague Castle, your chances of sampling it are slim. And on the subject of VIP visitors at Prague Castle, President Klaus and his wife Livia recently hosted Denmark's Crown Princess Mary. The Australian-born Danish princess was here on a two-day visit and caused a small uproar among Danish and Australian tourists when she visited Prague's main tourist attractions. "There's something about Mary," read the headlines in next day's papers, reporting that the Danish Crown Princess was a charming young woman. And in case she should feel homesick, her hosts prepared two Danish treats for the royal visitor, a visit to a Danish pastry house on Old Town Square, and an evening of Scandinavian music at the Prague Autumn Music Festival, where the Danish Symphony Orchestra performed some of the best-known works of Danish composer Carl Nielsen. Drive through the town of Brandýs nad Labem, north of Prague, and turn to the riverbank, you will come across a notice that reads, "The bridge between Brandýs nad Labem and the town of Záriby on the opposite side of the riverbank has been abolished." This sign raises a laugh from the locals, who will tell you that no such bridge ever existed. Yet the notice is official and has been placed there by the local town hall. So is this yet another sign of the country's sometimes Kafkaesque administration? In a way, it is. The sign had to be placed there because the non-existent bridge appeared in one type of road atlas. As a result, dozens of motorists, including many truck drivers who want to shorten their way across the river, end up on the riverbank looking for a non-existent bridge. The locals say they were sick and tired of explaining that the bridge never existed. The fault lies with the company which produced the atlas using data from old German military maps where the bridge had been projected, where the planned bridge never materialized, but its existence was perpetrated on dozens of Czech maps, and it thus lives to this day. Now the local authorities have decided to do away with it, and because explaining the sorry tale would take too long, they pretend to have abolished it. For a bridge that never existed, it has done pretty well, don't you think? Shampoo, powders, skin lotion, hairspray. Getting pampered by a team of professionals is a wonderful experience, even if you happen to be a cow. Of course, not every cow has the privilege. Only record-breaking dairy cows get that kind of treatment in the Czech Republic. And for last week's cattle show in Mrakov, cattle beauty specialists went all the way to show off the crème de la crème in the Czech cattle world to their colleagues from Holland. The local dairy farm reportedly has the fourth
best dairy cow in the world, and she got VIP treatment for the occasion. A pedicure, a tail trimming, a shaved and powdered udder, and some hairspray to make her coat gleam. And she was ready to face the jury with self-confidence. Amazing how far Czech cows have come since we joined the European Union. Czech farmers have produced a new white breed of carrots, which should appear on the market within the next 6 weeks. The white carrot is the latest fashion in the farming world and comes hot on the heels of the purple carrot. It took farmers from the town of Smrčice, southern Bohemia, 10 years to produce, and they're hoping that white carrots will become a hit with Czech consumers. However, like the purple cauliflower or blue potatoes previously produced by Czech farmers, it will take time getting used to. Czechs are known to be fairly conservative in their habits, and there are many who are simply not ready to order a side dish of blue potatoes. Farmers say the white carrots are less shocking and taste every bit as good as the orange ones. Czech Republic's most adventurous old lady, Olga Alexová, made headlines last year when she celebrated her 80th birthday with a parachute jump. This year, Olga was back in top form for her 81st birthday gift. Watched by TV crews and photographers, she executed a neat bungee jump from Zvíkov Bridge. "It's better than an apron and a box of sweets any day," Olga said about her birthday treat. Doing adrenaline sports is an expensive hobby, so the old lady has asked her family to pool money for an adrenaline-packed birthday present every year. Pleasing a grandma like Olga is not easy. Next year, she wants a ride in a Formula One racing car. When she turns 83, it will probably be a trip to the moon. Still, at 81, more power to her. Have you ever wondered what became of the little boy who played the young Mozart in Miloš Forman's famous film Amadeus? Miroslav Sekera from Prague is now 30 and an accomplished pianist. 25 years ago, he got the role of the boy Amadeus because he'd played both the piano and violin since age 3 and was more than accomplished for his age. He says filming with Miloš Forman was exciting because they sent a car for him every day and he felt very important. Moreover, he only had to do what came naturally, play classical music. In time, Miroslav had to choose which of those two instruments he would devote himself to, and he chose the piano. Last year, he released his first CD in the United States called In the Shadow of Amadeus.
You were listening there to Magazine with Daniela Lazarová. Now it's time for our weekly Czech lesson with Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Czech by Numbers, Radio Prague's own Czech learning program in which we examine the use of numbers in everyday Czech. Today I'm joined by
Linda Maštelíř
and we'll be looking at the Czech verb
počítat,
to count.
It covers the range of the English verbs to count, to reckon, to compute, to do sums. Choose what you like. In maths, you will often hear the perfective form of the verb, which is either
spočítat or vypočítat,
both meaning to come to a result by counting. The result, as well as the process of calculation of an equation, for example, is
výpočet.
The verb can be used in a figurative sense, just like in English. To count on, as in to count on somebody or something, is
počítat s někým
or
počítat s něčím.
If you'd like to tell someone not to count on you, you can say
nepočítejte se mnou.
In the sense of to guess, to reckon, you can come across the sentence
počítám, že přijde pozdě.
He'll arrive late, I reckon. Slavonic languages are tricky in that they use lots of prefixes which alter the meanings of verbs, something like phrasal verbs in English. Adding a prefix and a reflexive pronoun, you'll get the verb
přepočítat se,
which means to miscalculate, to make a mistake, to make a wrong judgment. The adjective
vypočítavý
is not a very nice one. It describes someone who likes to take advantage of situations, someone who calculates first whether something will pay off, someone shrewd, verging on manipulative. In short, it means the same as the English word calculating. The verb
počítat
is also part of an idiom.
Spočítat na prstech jedné ruky,
to count on the fingers of one hand. It means that there are so few people or items that they can be counted on the fingers of one hand. That is 5 maximum. And that's it for today. We'll be back with more numbers next time. Till then,
naschledanou!
Pavla Horáková and Linda Maštalíř there. In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Radio Prague's English service. Now another chance to hear this week's one-on-one with Rob Cameron.
My guest on this week's one-on-one is Jeremy Drucker, Executive Director of the media development organisation Transitions Online, or TOL for short. The organisation has two roles. It publishes a high-quality internet magazine covering 29 former communist countries in Central and Eastern Europe, the Balkans, and the former Soviet Union. And it also provides extensive media training for journalists from those post-communist countries. When I met Jeremy at TOL's offices in Žižkov, I began by asking him what had brought him to Prague.
I was one of the many Americans interested in Central and Eastern Europe, right around the beginning of the early 90s. But specifically, I was interested in the transformation of the press from a communist press to a more democratic press. I had heard some things about that, and then, like everyone else, got caught up in the interest in this region in the early 90s.
It often strikes me that treating this region, this former communist space, as one region is becoming less and less valid, that the Czech Republic should no longer be sort of dumped in the same basket as countries further east just because it was a former communist country. Do you agree with that?
I would agree. We hear that a lot. I have a lot of people saying, well, now that these countries are in the EU, shouldn't you stop covering them? Are they no longer post-communist? Are they somehow different from all the countries further east? My answer is always, we should keep covering them because in many ways they've become boring countries for the rest of the media. So there's actually very little that you can find about them. It's just the ways we think about them or the narrative stories we tell have changed. So it's very old now to think of this transformation from communism, but in say Central Europe, but the story is more now about, it's more of a business story. It's more about creating standards that are closer to Western Europe and North America. So there's still a lot of interesting stories. It's just we have to think about them in a completely different way and be sure that these countries are not grouped too closely with the countries that are farther behind.
Right, because if you look at the front page of Transitions Online today, you have an article about air safety in Russia, air crashes in Russia, the referendum in Transdniester, a journalist dying in a prison in Turkmenistan. Very, very different stories. What do you choose to cover?
We're trying to come up with a mix. So you would not come to TOL, to Transitions, for breaking news. It's more about deeper analysis. Like we hopefully take a step back and provide a different perspective. So I think we're really trying to pick issues where we have something different to say. And a lot of what we do is using local analysts and local reporters. But it is difficult covering so many countries, and not with a budget where we can cover every one of those countries every day. So I know tomorrow we're planning something on what's happening in Hungary. So that's an issue that we're getting a Hungarian journalist to write about. We're asking him not to provide a play-by-play of the daily events, but to take a step back and kind of put into context why, in a place like Hungary, are people out there torching the television building.
It's often said that the political pressure on the media in this part of the world has disappeared, but it's been replaced with commercial pressure from advertisers. In the sort of Czech context, how much pressure are newspapers like Mladá fronta dnes or Lidové noviny under from the commercial sector?
Mostly what I hear is anecdotal. And I think it's a mix of the two. You never really have evidence of the political interference. You just hear about it secondhand. So it's really hard to know because no one comes forward and says, well, this politician called me up and wanted this article pushed under the carpet or something like that. So it's again, more anecdotal of some journalists getting fired and people reading political pressure into that. One of the most popular political programs on Czech television was canceled, right before the elections or leading up to it. It seemed too coincidental.
That was Bez Obal, was it?
Right, yeah. Right. And that seemed too coincidental at the time. The timing just seemed suspicious. Commercial, I think, interference, you hear that as well. I think less in companies being covered more favorably, which you see a lot in, say, the Russian media, or you see what these paid articles that everyone knows they exist. That happened a lot here, from what I understand, back in the 1990s. I think that probably doesn't happen as much anymore. It's more commercial interest somehow making the media here more tabloidish, or whatever the term is. So they're going more down market. When you see a paper like Mladá fronta, which should really be the country's paper of record, or one of them, having special supplements on reality shows, to me that says something wrong about the media and about commercial interests dominating the editorial agenda.
And it's obviously not just Mladá fronta dnes as well. Many of the other papers, Lidové noviny, Pravo, they have the same supplements.
Exactly. I think once one paper does it, the others do it. And I think that still surprises me that the papers think that they have to cover that part, or they would lose a lot of their readers. And so what that tells me is that they still believe more of their readership is interested in these issues than the potential readership of having a real paper of record that everyone would have to buy every day.
Now, the role of NGOs such as yourselves, Transitions is essentially an NGO, is not always welcome, is it? I'm reminded of criticism from President Klaus, who spoke out very strongly against the role of NGOs, saying that change should come from within a country rather than being pushed from without. What do you think of that idea, that NGOs have no place in meddling in other countries' affairs?
The great bomb, which probably Klaus doesn't quite understand, is if NGOs from outside the country aren't going to do it, then no one is going to do it in some of these countries, because the local NGO climate is so bad in countries like Belarus and Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan and those kind of places. So I think there are ways that some NGOs have of operating which tend to exaggerate or point out this interference in so-called state sovereignty. And mistakes have been made. I think you saw that in some of the so-called revolutions that happened across the region, and where the U.S. was accused of involvement in funding NGOs that fomented revolution and all of that. There are ways when we practice, we try not to call a lot of publicity to what we're doing in some of these countries that were more repressive, because it just doesn't make sense, and it puts the journalists who participate in our courses at risk as well.
Do you think, Jeremy, that journalism is still a vibrant, exciting profession to be in?
I think it really depends on where a journalist is from. We train so many people that I hope that they are still interested in staying in the profession, because that is always a worry among us and also the donors, that the people we train will end up going into PR. That's always a big threat. Because what happens is a lot of the young journalists that we train, they learn new ways, new methods, they go back. The editors, the gatekeepers, are still the old school. So they have a problem, and I think then they get discouraged about being journalists. On the other hand, there are new publications sprouting up all the time in many of these countries, internet publications, various opportunities for people who are young and ambitious and who are then able to do these great investigative stories beyond the nightly news that their older colleagues would really dream of doing in the West. On the other hand, some of the countries the new EU member states, for example, those journalists have graduated away from learning standard journalism skills. They're now learning about the EU, about globalization, about financial reporting. And I think they see their horizons as being much, much more optimistic and more hopeful. So it's hard to say. In the countries farther east, it gets pretty depressing and even dangerous to be a journalist. You go farther east, there are a lot more exciting opportunities. So somewhere in the middle overall for the region.
Okay. Jeremy, thank you very much.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
We've reached the end of this Radio Prague program. Thanks for joining us and be sure to tune in again tomorrow. For a review of our older programs, visit our website www.radio.cz/English, where you'll find most of our reports transcribed and available in sound. My name's Dita Asiru. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye and take care.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.